It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's still in Barcelona, but he joins us thanks to the power of the Skype. Mary Jo Foley, of course, is here as well from New York, New York. We'll be talking about the latest Windows news, including the last-minute news. There'll be no more updates this week. It looks like we're getting ready for the creators update, but a little bit of a tiny showstopper slowing things down. We'll talk about Xbox updates, the new Outlook.com Insider preview, and a whole lot more. Windows Weekly coming up next.
Netcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 530, recorded Wednesday, August 9th, 2017. Lifting Thor's Hammer. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Here they are, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, Paul's not on the list, but Mary Jo Foley, I think the number eight most influential tech reporter in the world. You saw that list?
No.
Oh.
Whose list was this?
Somebody ranked tech journalists based on the number of people who other tech journalists who follow them on Twitter. Wow. It's one of them recursive algorithms that Larry Page made famous.
I don't know if that makes you important, actually, to be honest.
You're more important than me or Paul.
Sure.
And then they had the nerve of doing a tag cloud to rub it in. Let me see if I can find it. Well, I was very pleased to see that I knew a few of the people on there, including Mary Jo Foley.
Mm-hmm.
Kara Swisher was number one, of course. Where is it? Most influential. I should probably spell it with it. If you're looking up influential journalists, you probably should spell it properly. 30, is this it? No. Yeah, here it is. Oh, but that was last year. Let me find because he did this again this month.
It's funny. Now everyone's tweeting cat pictures.
Ay, 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 caramba.
Remember when we did that and we said, everyone tweet the beers you're drinking, and everyone started tweeting pictures of beer.
Like, okay, right. I guess we got what we asked for.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Scoble fell off the charts this year. I mean, he's on them, but
he's not really a journalist now, is he?
He's not a journalist.
I don't think he was ever a journalist.
Yeah.
He was never
Isn't
a journalist.
Isn't he now like a VR guy or something?
Yeah, well, he's now actually more of a journalist than he was.
Okay.
Because he's a journalist in the VR space. So here's the insulting tag cloud.
Who are these people?
Managing director at Apollo Research. So here, the reach among U.S.-based technology writers, writers only. Number one, Kara Swisher, Walt Mossberg, David Pogue. Wait a minute.
That's crazy.
This is an old list.
This is last year's.
Yeah, this is weird.
I need the new one. Here's the 2017. This is it. Yeah. New tag cloud. Mike Isaac, he's with a bullet because, of course, he's writing for the New York Times. He's good. I like Mike, but he's number two.
I don't even recognize that name. I read the New York Times.
Yeah, Swisher, Isaac, Farhad Manjoo, Walt Mossberg.
Not even a journalist.
Harry McCracken, Jenna Wortham, rising up. Again, the Times seems to have some impact on this.
This is a strange list. No offense.
I know. It's all New York Times, right?
Yeah, well, Stacey Higginbotham, she's unaffiliated or independent. Yeah. That's good.
Yep.
Casey Newton of The Verge, Sarah Lacey of Pando Media, a new hot up-and-coming, Dan Primack of Axios. They're number 12, somebody we all know, Mary Jo Foley. And just the good news is you beat Ina Fried.
Yeah.
So,
The interesting thing about this is how few of these people I recognize.
I know them all, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm sorry.
David Pogue going down from number 2 last year to number 22.
That makes sense.
Jenny Jardin, Brian Krebs, Katie Benner. That's we know a lot of these people, but you and me, Paul.
Shira.
Not on the list. Not on the list.
Well, I mean, you need more Twitter followers. If people followed me, they'd be learning about the internals of Windows 10S, and that would be boring for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, instead they get to learn about enterprise tech.
Hadoop,
come on.
So it's the data lake thing.
Has a lot more to do with probably how much you tweet stuff on Twitter. So I've, in response to this, completely changed what I do on Twitter. And now I
in response to this?
Yeah, because I want to be number 1 next year.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
come on. Yeah. These lists don't matter.
No, I know. They're silly. Just want to let you know that Megan Maroney, who was also on our team, came home to a wall of red Solo cups last night.
That's fantastic.
And tweeted that.
Oh, man.
I'm not tweeting stuff. I'm tweeting good
cats
stuff.
Cats would make mincemeat of that.
I think the cats are...
I know. Yeah.
It looks like something furry is inside. I don't... Anyway, that's enough. Enough about us. What about Windows? And actually, more to the point, Paul Theriot, what about Xbox?
Thank you. Although I feel obligated to point out that Mary Jo actually put that one first on the list.
You know, it's a slim pickings week on things to talk about when I lead the show notes with that.
I woke up this morning and I opened the notes, which she had started or done, you know, and I Skyped her and I said, I know what you've done. I'm on to you. This is obviously a gag of some kind. You put the Xbox story first.
Yeah.
But actually, like she just said, there really wasn't a lot going on this week.
And there's actually a few interesting things about the Xbox thing, even for me.
Right. Wow. Well, let's hear about that first.
Okay. Well, the most interesting thing. So this week, Xbox Fall Creators Update insider builds are beginning to roll out to people in the alpha ring. And I saw a couple of people note this build is called 1710. So that's interesting because we have been hearing Windows 10 Fall Creators Update referred to as 1709. Yes. So that surprised me because I believe when Creators Update started rolling out earlier this year, the first version of it that rolled out was Xbox, right?
Yeah, I actually went back and looked at this, and the last two major Xbox updates were tied very closely to the corresponding Windows 10 update. Yeah.
So if you remember, I've harped on this a few times, and you laughed both times I did, but I'm going to say it again.
Wow.
At build, I noticed that some of these people were hedging. They weren't calling it a September release for Fall Creators Update. They were saying, it'll be this fall. And the reason we think it's September is Microsoft said, I think it was around April or May this year, that there are going to be 2 feature updates for Windows going forward. And the target dates are September and March. So we, of course, assumed this would be 1709 and it would be out in September or at least in October because 1703 started rolling out in April, right?
You know, I was just going to say to you, to be fair to the people who believe this thing is 1709, that is what the version number says in the insider preview, except that I just checked and it actually no longer says that. Now it says 1703, and that is really interesting because
that's weird.
Did say 1709 for a long time. Yep.
Okay. Interesting.
There you go. And it's, go ahead. Sorry.
Another conspiracy theory. It's not a conspiracy theory, but... I've been looking through the Ignite session catalog this week for things, and what they call the Windows Server release, which also we believed was 1709, they're starting to call that the Windows Server Fall release instead of 1709.
Yeah, so, I mean, when they talk about that twice a year update schedule, they, roughly March, roughly September,
right? They said targets, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, So it's interesting. It makes me wonder because I think it's still in the notes, but it's not happening this week. We were talking about the possibility of a build coming out as soon as today, and assuming that this thing is kind of winding down, you might. I said, maybe the desktop watermark will be gone. And that's how we'll know. We could be a month or more away from that, actually, if this happens. The other thing is, of course, that the Xbox release might just be on a slightly different release schedule.
Yeah.
This is, in fact, the first release they've ever put out to the public for the Fall Critters update, which, by the way, they're not calling. In the Xbox post, they don't call it that.
No.
I did, and I was interested to see that virtually everyone else did as well. Mm. And there will be more features coming. And so it kind of makes sense that this thing on Xbox might not be ready for September, and October maybe is more reasonable because we have more features to come. So it could be any of those.
I mean, Scorpio, what's Scorpio's date? Some November, right?
I Xbox should know that right off the top of my head, but I actually think I thought it was October.
Or is it October?
No, I think they said November.
I forget what they said, if it was
October. I don't know why I have October in my head, but yeah, someone will know the exact date.
Yeah.
Hello, chat room. Do you know?
What did they say?
Hello.
Was it October 30th?
They're busy wondering why Paul Thurrott's not on the list of the top 100 tech info.
Yes.
November
Inquiring
11th.
Minds.
Remember, 11th. The 11th of November.
So maybe they're going to want this to ship with this major update, right? They don't want it to ship and then have to update immediately to something humongous.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Could be.
Could be.
All I know.
Yeah,
is,
so that was all I cared about the Xbox Fall update. But I know you care about what actually was
there
in
slightly
it.
Other, yeah, there are a few other things that I have a small interest in. You know, it's very interesting to me. I've always thought that the Xbox One technologically was a fairly, you know, is a powerful system, is a great console. I'm okay with the UI. I don't, you know, the dashboard UI. I've never really been super bothered by the interface beyond the fact that I've always felt that the performance has been a problem. And by performance, I sort of mean that those transitionary screens when you select something and something slides over or whatever it is, like the Xbox Guide is a good example. The Xbox Guide, as it was implemented on the Xbox 360, which was a kind of little thing that kind of popped up in the middle, was always a huge performance dog. And if you ever hit the Xbox button on your controller by mistake, it was always horrible if you were in the middle of a game because the game would kind of slow to a stop behind you. It would slide up over the top. And then you were furiously hitting it again to get rid of it, but it was so slow. It was always just a major drag on the game. It was always terrible when that happened. And it's weird that they never got it right with Xbox One. And so we've had actually several major system updates for the Xbox One, several different versions of the dashboard. And here we are again. We're getting yet another one. It's actually kind of incredible. And I haven't seen it yet because I'm away. I've just seen the pictures. They have some animated GIFs, I guess, of it. But, there's been kind of a strange reaction to it out in the world. A lot of people kind of already hate it. And a lot of people hate every single update that Microsoft puts out for the Xbox One. I think of the dashboard as that thing that gets between me and the game that I'm playing, which is Call of Duty. And I don't really care about any of the cursory stuff that kind of happens around the edges of the screen. Like, I want to just, you know, click and go play. But here we are again. And it's interesting, too, because they did this in the last major update. Some of the ways in which they're increasing the performance is just to reduce the button presses that it takes to get from A to B, right? And so it's kind of a false way of achieving performance. In other words, the system itself can't handle the speed of transitioning, so we're just going to put everything on the same page, you know? And it's a little goofy, so there's that kind of stuff going on. They've added some elements of the Fluent Design System from Windows 10 for some reason to this thing, probably just for more, a slightly more consistent look and feel. And, you know, there's a bunch of other stuff and there's more coming. But right now, very few people have it. It's really kind of a select group of people who are in that kind of tier A alpha ring that they have, which is invite only. And, you know, the rest of us is just going to have to wait. And so it will probably make its way down the ring system over time. And then, of course, there'll be future updates that have more features, too.
You're not an alpha ring person?
Actually, I think I might be, but I'm not home, so I don't have access to my
phone. Because I'm like, you must be,
Well, I wasn't originally, and then I...
I know, kind of, I remember that.
...baby, and eventually they finally said, okay, shut him up. And,
he's whining. give him the alpha ring.
Oh, so now I just complain because it updates too much.
You can't just be alpha ring.
No. And so actually, interestingly and coincidentally to this, Microsoft announced today separately from this that they are also changing the way the Xbox Insider program works. Now, this is a really convoluted story. I don't want to go into this too far because this is one of those things that will cause Mary Jo to bring out her gong. But this actually right makes me crazy. Microsoft has Insider programs for various products and services, obviously. And if you think about the way the Windows Insider program works, it's just to kind of simplify it. You know, you have a fast ring, a slow ring. You actually have a ring or two beyond that. But let's just say fast, slow ring, whatever it is. Anyone can join at any time. Anyone can select the ring they want to be in. Once you're in that ring, you are contributing to the telemetry data that Microsoft is getting. And that alone, I think, is a service that you're providing. Because I think the volume of telemetry is one of the things that's very important about it. Now, you may what they want you to do and what you may do is manually provide feedback when things go wrong. You could, you know, fill it a little feedback form in the feedback hub. In the Xbox, it does not work this way. There are four tiers or rings. Actually, now they're calling them groups for some reason because everything's different. The way it has worked to date, I could be slightly wrong here, but I believe the only one you could choose to be in originally was the lowest ring, like the coach class version, ring four or whatever it was called. In order to get into the other ones, you had to be invited. And, you know, that's not kind of the open, transparent system. Like, I sort of feel in the world of Xbox, just like in the world of Windows, that you, by deciding that, yes, you're going to download some huge volume of updates, because it is a lot of stuff, that you, just by doing that and having your system alive on the internet and doing things, they're getting telemetry data that I think is valuable to them. And that I sort of don't quite get why this has been so exclusive. So the good news is, with today's updates, it's actually possible for anyone to get into the lower three tiers now, with two caveats. Each of the tiers, the third and the second tier have requirements based on length of service, meaning the length of time you've been in the Xbox Insider program, and also based on experience points. And you get experience points by providing feedback, and so it's sort of a reward-based system. You have they have little tasks you can run through in the Insider app. They have bugs and feedback that you can file. And as you do more of that, you gain more experience points. So I'm actually okay with that. I mean, I think that makes some sense that you want people in there who are, in fact, providing feedback, and you're allowing them to do it. But that top tier, the alpha tier, is still invite only. And it's kind of, it's like the secret society over there at Xbox. I mean, we don't really know, how they make those decisions. They're not transparent about it. And so each of the tiers gets different kinds of updates at different times, different volumes of updates. And I think in the alpha ring, it's some tens and tens of gigabytes of data per month, and some tens of actual updates. Actually, I think there are updates fairly regularly. I think it's even, there could be an update almost every day, basically. So they've improved it, but it's still a little goofy.
You know what's so weird? Hearing you talk about this, I'm kind of surprised they haven't coordinated the Insider programs across Xbox and Windows more than
I went back and looked at what I wrote about this because they announced the changes. I said, well, I got to go see how does this compare to what they were doing before. And when they announced it, Larry Herb, who is Major Nelson, said that this program would be open to everybody. And my natural assumption based on that quote was that they were doing just what you said, that this thing that I thought they had really done well over in Windows was going to come over to Xbox, which is part of Windows now, right? Part of the same business. That made sense to me, of course. I mean, the executives in both parts of that company are kind of together now, right? This has been one of the things they brought Xbox into Windows, essentially. So to me, that made sense. And that is not what they did. And so it's open in the sense that anyone can join, but you get cattle class. You're in the back. And you really don't get a lot of anything. Like, you don't get updates a lot. And what they really want you to do is start filing feedback and maybe you can work your way up in the world. But before it was completely non-transparent. Now it's a little more transparent, except for the top tier. And, it's better. I have to admit it's better. But it's still, I just don't understand why these programs are different. They should
me neither.
Be the same.
Because they're doing the same thing with Office Insider, right? And Windows Server Insider. Like, they're getting all these programs kind of aligned. And then you've got Xbox. And you could make the case that Xbox really is very different because it's about gaming, but like you just said, Xbox is part of Windows and devices. So It just seems like it would make more sense to be on the same kind of a ring schedule and calendar schedule and all that.
At the risk of being gonged, I didn't provide a number of details that I think would have put this conversation.
I'm appreciative.
Bottom, so to speak.
Thank you.
And there are a lot of complexities to this. So there are even things like there's a Delta ring where some users are going to get updates, certain updates, and some are going to get the others. And they're doing all this kind of crazy stuff. And so all I'll say is, because rather than just complain about the same thing over and over again. One of the things I think that one of the things they're doing that I think is pretty cool, although it's a little nebulous and unclear how it works, is they have talked to their first party publishers, meaning the game companies that work under Microsoft, Microsoft Game Studios, as well as third party publishers, to allow insiders to test their games ahead of time, which I think is what everyone really wants, right? I mean, when you think about gamers, you know, testing the Xbox dashboard is like, okay, but I mean, most people, most of these guys just want to play games. And so the ability to have, especially third party game testing occur through the insider program is actually pretty exciting. But little asterisks, I obviously the guys down in Ring 3 and 4 are not going to be getting these games, right? And so, and we don't know what those games are, how they're going to appear, when they're going to appear, whatever. But if you're in the Alpha Ring, obviously, you're probably hooked up pretty well already. And maybe in the, I can think of the Beta Ring as the second ring down. You know, you may get access to like game beta testing. And I think that's kind of the holy grail when you're a gamer. Yeah. I mean, that's what you look for. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. I mean, they clearly, you know, care about the community and all that kind of stuff. I don't mean to dump on them, but they've just created this thing that's so convoluted and confusing. And if you want to hurt your brain, go read the Xbox Wire post today about this change. It's indecipherable.
Boy.
Yeah.
I'll just take your word for it.
Yes. Well, you can do it. Yeah. I found it hard
I'll
to understand.
Take a pass.
You just before the show, you mentioned that there will be no button pushed by Donna Sakar this week. Let's talk about that. There's also a server 2016 build. And more coming up in just a second. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Paul Thurrott, who's an asterisk, Mary Jo Foley, the number 12th most influential.
I am not even qualified to carry her bags.
Asterisk. Asterisk.
You mean like the cartoon from France, or do you mean like the little stars?
Asterix. Oui, Asterix. I understand he's also very popular in Barcelona.
Sorry, a statue of him made out of chocolate this week.
Really? I'd be tempted to eat the Viking horns.
It's a strange combination of things, I'd
know. Yeah. I am going to download the top 100 list. Maybe you'll show up on that.
Oh, jeez. All right. I honestly had not heard of this list and wasn't.
No one's ever heard of this. And no, one cares. Except the people on the top. I'm sure Kara Swisher has a bumper sticker and a t-shirt, but I'm number one.
But and she puts a soccer van. That she-
But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. If you're buying a new house, like Paul just did, I want you to, I'm not going to query you on your experience buying a new house, Paul, but I noticed that you have immediately decamped to Spain and you're drinking quantities of Rioja. So I can only assume.
Just say this, Leo, because I know this is a promo piece. It's not been good.
You should have got a rocket. How many times do I have to? All right. Okay. Don't be like Paul.
Yes, please. In so many ways.
In so many ways. I want you to go to Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans, of course, number one lender in the U.S. Number two, actually. The other one's that big bank that we went to 3 years ago that I would not recommend to my worst enemy. Because it took like months. We were on vacation. We were like you, Paul. We were in Europe and we were faxing documents. They came back with wanting more. I imagine you're in. Do you have a fax machine?
I have
machine?
This exact story, and it's not doesn't involve a fax. I don't want to interrupt this any further. I'm sorry, but yes, this has been happening.
Yeah,
yes.
They keep coming back for more. So wouldn't it be cool if instead of that, you could go to your phone, go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. You could do it on a computer, of course, or a tablet, but it even works on the phone. And then you simply say, I want a mortgage. This is the term. This is the rate I'm looking for. You don't even have to go get financial records. Not only don't you have to go to the bank, you don't have to go to the attic. You don't have to find your pay stubs from last year or your – Who has those, really? Or your bank statements from the last 5 years? Right? None of that. Because with their trusted partners in the financial industry, Quicken Loans has everything you need. You just give them permission. They will crunch the numbers. And because it's all online, all computerized, instead of taking months or weeks or days even, it takes minutes. You could be at an open house saying, let's buy this, and have your loan approval in your hand on the screen to show the realtor, whether you're looking to buy your first or your 10th. Or refi your existing Rocket Mortgage. They do thousands of calculations in a second, and based on your income, your assets, and your credit, they're going to analyze all the home options for which you qualify, the home loan options, and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage is from Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country. Just go look at that website where you see all those year after year, 7 years running, J.D. Power customer satisfaction, number one in customer satisfaction for mortgage approval and for mortgage servicing. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently with Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. Please use /windows. That way they know you heard it here. rocketmortgage.com/windows. Put a bookmark or something. You may not need it today, but if you're going to buy a house sometime, you're going to want to know about this. Put a bookmark in your browser. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. rocketmortgage.com/windows. Don't be like Paul. It's our new slogan. I love it.
Or don't me. Be another Paul.
Don't be or me. I mean, we, you know, but they didn't have, in my defense, they didn't have Rocket Mortgage way back then.
Yep.
Moving right along, there's not going to be a Windows Insider built this week, right?
Right.
This
whole week. That's pretty serious.
Was that a tweet from Donna, or
yes.
Did she call you at home?
No, but you know, we've been, you know, each day, you know, we kind of check in with her on Twitter, and she provides an update. And you know, nothing Monday, nothing Tuesday. This morning, we were looking at a problem. We'll see how it goes. And apparently, it's really serious because she just tweeted that not only we're not getting a bill today, we're not getting one this week. And you have to think the plan. Well, obviously, the plan was to get us a build, and so something happened, as we say in Windows land.
See, I was going to interpret it very positively, like they're so close now that they're just figuring, oh, we're not going to – why give them another build? Let's just push the thing out.
I mean, so until Mary Jo brought up that topic at the start of the show, I really had been in the mindset that we're closing in on the end of this thing. I'm running it on the two computers that I have here. I find it to be stable and usable, and it's fine. There's no, you know, major issues, that kind of thing. And, of course – you know, I'm interested in what's new, but, you know, it's odd to me still. The past several builds have had a few new features each. We've had some builds maybe a month or so ago that have had major numbers of new features. And so it's almost like they're running this thing like a service. It's weird. They're they're just adding stuff all the time. Yeah, they should coin a term for that.
Well, in fact, just a little bit, skipping a little ahead in our notes, which I guess we could have made the order a little better. The creators update that came out after Windows Weekly ended last week on a Wednesday, it had a bunch of new features in it. They weren't like gigantic new features, but the eye tracking beta was in there.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And then there were the colors for the console were in there. And there were a whole bunch of pretty good updates to Windows Defender Application Guard, which is the thing that was codenamed Barcelona,
right?
Interestingly, and that is meant for security in the Edge browser. So the past few builds, I believe, before this, there had not been any updates. And somebody even told me they removed the link to Windows Defender Application Guard in one build, making me wonder if they were going to cut it. So it's back, and it has a whole bunch of enhancements. So it looks like it's going to make it into the Fall Creators Update. So right. there was a lot new in last week's build.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I just instead of actually doing the joke, I'll just tell you about the joke I never did, which was that had I been home and had I had access to multiple computers I do have two here, but both are serving a specific purpose. I would have actually wiped out a machine and clean installed this build just so I could write an ode to the new console colors. And I actually started it. I have kind of a little poem
thing. Were you going to set it to music or just maybe have some?
Yeah. Well, so You remember I did the thing about the surface loop one day.
Yeah.
I also
have an
abortive second attempt. It was set to the song, The Candle in the Wind song, which is actually called Goodbye, Norman. Which is,
you're not going to sing this, are you?
Goodbye, Black and White.
I'm just getting the gong ready in case.
No. Yeah, anyway, it was kind of along the theme of that kind of a theme.
Yeah.
And so, like, I've done a few of these things before. Like, one time I did, like, a State of Microsoft thing where I took a George W. Bush State of the Union speech and changed it to be about Microsoft.
Nice. Nice.
And nobody, like, literally no one who read it.
No one got it. No one got it.
Like, yeah. You know, so. Right, there's a lot of abortive jokes occurring here is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's good you weren't home then.
Well, yes, but what cracks me up is that you're not known as a console guy particularly, or are you? I mean, I know you don't like the bash.
Well,
do you like the command prompt? Is that what you're saying?
I have a rich history, Leo, of you know. I mean, look, I've been a developer. I was a system administrator.
I'm sure you can live in the command line. I don't mean to knock you. And perhaps your disdain for the bash shell is feigned. Perhaps you actually secretly employ it in your spare time. But
I would never admit to that publicly. We joke about it, but the truth is, I think this is an incredibly important addition to Windows. And actually, we have another story today about an update on that. And
I'm surprised you didn't have colors, because the first thing I do when I,
I do. So that's the problem. So the way this came out in the build last week was that if you upgraded a system to this build, you don't get the new colors.
Oh.
And I think that the reason being they couldn't support an upgrade of custom colors. So I actually do customize my console with custom colors. And so, anyway, this was all
You couldn't do this before.
No, sorry. They have new colors. So, in other words, what's happened
new
is
colors.
They haven't updated the color schemes that are available in the console over 20 years.
There were only 16 colors, probably.
No, I think there's a number of colors.
Now there's 256.
It's 8-bit color now. 8-bit. So they, but a lot of it has to do with just contrast issues on modern screen technology. Literally, the last time the color scheme in the console was updated, CRTs were all that we had, basically. They were maybe the first flat screens were happening. But all of the advances that have occurred since then, not just to screen technology, unrelated to DPI or, you know, flatness, whatever it is, but just the technology behind the screens, has rendered some of the color combinations unreadable or nearly unreadable because we're using completely different types of screens now. So they've just updated the color schemes.
Got it.
To be more contrasty. In other words, you have black text on gray, which is actually what I use typically, or if you think of it like PowerShell is some like bright colors on kind of a dark blue background. You know, you want to choose things that have contrast so that the words on the screen are both readable, but also they don't blend into the background too much.
I always use, I'm kind of boring, I always set it to white on black.
Yeah.
That's kind of
dull. I do the opposite.
But I can read it. If it's too white,
Black on light gray.
It hurts my eyes. I don't get out much. And so I'm in the basement. I don't want anything too bright. So.
I actually use the gray from Amiga DOS 2.0 as the
background color.
Oh, nice.
Nerdy. Can you get amber on black now?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you could.
I sense a new field guide in the makings.
Windows console field guide?
Yeah. Now, the console is for CMD, but that's gone, right? Or is it not gone? It's, I guess
oh, no,
it's
still
10S,
there.
It's gone. Yeah. And then there's PowerShell, but it would...
I think it might be in 10S.
Is it?
Okay. It has to be in 10S. They're not a supporting additional console. So PowerShell uses Windows console, and so does the Windows subsystem for Linux.
Okay. So that's the console. Yeah,
they all support the same customization.
That's another thing. The first thing I do when I set up a Linux is I install a different terminal program than the default.
Because nerd. Yeah, no,
yeah,
Chris.
I know, pot calling.
Yes, okay, yeah. as do we all.
Yeah, no, who doesn't, right? We all have our favorites. Just go ahead and go to Reddit and start a thread on
your favorite
terminal program.
Yikes.
Right, followed by your favorite.
which encoding do you prefer? Are you a UTF-8 guy, or would you?
Ed. I find it to be,
Ed, give me Ed.
Simple.
We actually weren't we recommending? What were you recommending to Mary Jo last week? Was it G-Edit? Somebody said it's not.
Oh, or you know, one of those.
There were
things,
a lot of like things recommended.
Yeah. Somebody said the one we recommended has been deprecated. Is there not?
Yeah, of course. Yes. That's going to be the title of my autobiography.
Deprecated.
You've been deprecated.
Oh, I like it. Oh, I like it. Maybe on my tombstone. Deprecated.
Just deprecated, the Paul Theroux story.
Deprecated. Such a good word, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Such a good
it
word.
It really is awesome.
Okay. 2016 Insider Bill, that support for... Did you already do that for WSL?
No, we didn't do that one.
Oh,
speaking
good,
of...
This is funny. You'd think you'd do that in the server long before you would do it on the desktop.
Yeah. I kind of debated this one internally, actually. But yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. Why? I understand why they did it in the client. Yeah. Well, because client had more of a first of all, client had the insider program. So remember, this thing's been in beta. And right. So now that it's out of beta, they can add it to server. But I know most developers are going to be running the client. Like Microsoft has a what are we at now? Like 15-year history of pushing stuff off of the server because they don't want people to use it like an interactive workstation. And so, you know, the ability to run WSL on a client against the server is fine, but running it on the server, I kind of understand why they held off on that.
Yeah. So this is this was the second insider build for Windows Server. It was it came out yesterday, build 16.257, which is the same number as the one that came out last week for client. So they're getting closer in numbers, which is good. Mm-hmm. I guess. It's kind of arbitrary, but kind of nice.
Yep.
And so, you know, Windows Server is on the same twice a year cadence for new feature updates like client is now. So the target is around September for server to get a major feature update. And there weren't a ton of brand new things in this build, but Windows Subsystem for Linux being added with support for three Linux distributions was one of the big ones. And now you can also use the remote server administration tools on your Windows 10 client so that you can manage the server as of this build. So that's also kind of handy. But otherwise, yeah, that was that pretty much. If you want to be in the Server Insider program, you can. I think if you are a Windows client insider, you automatically can be in the Server Insider program, or you can sign up for the Windows Insider for Business program and be in the server server beta. I'm calling it beta insider program.
Right. So, by the way, I just saw something you retweeted that I think is beautiful and is worth discussing, which is the TechNet blog post about Windows as a service in a nutshell, which is described as the shortest blog ever, which, you know, takes something fairly complex and basically just breaks it down to Windows 10 will have new feature updates released to the semi-annual channel twice per year, around, by the way, around, right? There's that word, March and September. Each feature update will be serviced for 18 months from the date of release. Office 365 Pro Plus. Doing the same thing. That's it.
There you have it.
You know, that's pretty much, that's pretty good.
It is. It's good because a lot of people, including us, when we saw the original blog post about the changes, we were like, oh man, this is getting so complicated. It's so hard to explain it. So,
Yeah, no, my article about this topic has a picture of the Titanic going down, and it's kind of an 1800-word rant about how this system is unsustainable. But no, this is another way of looking at it for sure.
It's handy though. That's everything.
No,
you.
Good.
I mean, it's not everything you need to know because they don't bring in like long-term servicing channel and all that. But that if you, they call it Windows as a service in a nutshell. There it is. There's your nutshell.
I like it.
Windows 10 FCUIS. What is FCU?
I know I shouldn't use that abbreviation.
What is FCU? I can imagine.
Fall Creators Update.
Oh, okay, Fall Creators.
Yep. I know.
Oh, the FCU.
It's not as terrible as it sounds.
Okay.
Also, the name of a Baptist college in Alabama or something.
FCU.
Good old FCU.
Ah, yes. Roll FCU. So that's interesting. Do they do ISOs for insider builds? I didn't know they did that. Or no?
Yeah, they do, and they don't do them regularly. So, in other words, if a new build came out today, we wouldn't get an ISO that day, which is tough because a lot of people want to do a clean install right away, and so typically the latest ISO for Insider will be anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks behind to 1 month or more behind. And so they usually give you a couple of builds to choose from, which I really like. And I don't understand why on the production version of Windows 10, I can't go back and install the previous update, right? All they ever have is the very latest version, which, you know, I get, but it seems like in some cases you might need an older version. Maybe you have a hardware that isn't supported in the latest version or whatever. Anyway, on the Insider program, we have two choices today. I think it's usually two. And so they bumped it up to the previous build, which is the build that matches the server build that Mary Jo was just talking about, and then an earlier build. I don't remember the number, but yeah. And so they just released that today.
Cool. And
no, it's handy, right? Because people are always saying, where is the ISO? Because it's too hard for me to install
yeah.
it.
Oh, it's very and download handy. Yeah. It. I prefer yeah. the ISOs, yeah.
So the issue I have with this is they've improved the Insider program via Windows Update to the point where if you were on the shipping version of Windows 10 and you said, I want to get to the latest Insider preview today, all you have to do is switch over to the Insider preview, reboot your computer, go to Windows Update, and you're going to get it. So let's say you said, well, I want to do a clean install of the Windows 10 Insider Preview. Well, what's the fastest way to do that? Actually, it doesn't matter. You could grab this ISO, which is not the most current build, or you could grab the ISO for the shipping version of Windows 10, install it, and then through Windows Update, upgrade to the latest version of the Insider Preview. It's the same exact process. So I'm not sure there's an advantage. You know, unless it's super recent, there's not a huge advantage to getting it this way. It's mm-hmm. a little strange. Like, I don't quite understand why it's never up to date.
Hmm. And skip ahead is now closed, but apparently there's still no reason to panic.
Yeah.
And you thought the Xbox Insider program was complicated.
Let's skip ahead. I think you mentioned this before, seems to me.
Yeah.
Well.
So skip ahead was something they introduced a couple weeks ago where they said, hey, insiders, if you want to make sure that you can get the first builds of Redstone 4 as soon as they're out, select skip ahead so that you can be in the program as soon as that code is available. And they mentioned at the time it would be limited to a set number of people. They didn't say how many, but they did say we are going to close it because we want some people to keep testing Redstone 3 and we don't want all of you jumping to Redstone 4. So they closed it. And a lot of people, I think, who didn't understand what that meant, think they will not be able to ever test Redstone 4 now, which is not the case. So once Microsoft's done with Redstone 3, which is the Fall Creators Update, when they've hit their internal RTM and they're ready to move along to the next build, they're going to open up the Redstone 4 code to all the insiders. So just because you're not in the skip ahead, don't panic. You're still going to get the code at some point. You're just not going to get it like the very second the first things come out. And you know what? When those first builds come out, usually they're just doing work under the covers and there aren't any new features in those builds. So I don't think you're going to miss a whole lot.
Cool.
Hmm.
Hmm. Hmm.
Do you disagree, Paul?
No, he doesn't care.
I do not.
Okay. Okay.
He's
drunk
commentary
on
this.
Ham.
Yeah. All I can smell is the fat from the ham. My body is coated in a weird, shiny, fatty patina.
Yuck.
When this happened, I saw a bunch of people complaining about it on Twitter, and it was like, guys, you know, they said right up front, this is a temporary thing, limited audience. If you want to get in, you got to do it now. You know, I don't think it's a big deal. We're right in this. Look, we're in the 30-day whatever period where we're going to be moving right along to the next thing anyway. You know, it's all going to happen.
Right.
It's all happening here.
Yep.
Yep. Something tells me it's all happening at the zoo. Outlook.com beta program. Everybody's going to want to be a part of this. And fortunately, everybody gets to.
Yes. And unlike the Insider program, it's less scary to me because at any point you can just go, oh, I don't want to be here. Click, hit the toggle, go back to the regular old Outlook.com.
Yeah.
So this is a new beta program. They aren't calling this an Insider program. This is for people on Outlook.com.
Oh, I think I can explain that. But...
Yeah. Okay. Feel free.
It's not an ongoing program. It's literally a beta for the next version of Outlook.com. So yep. Eventually it's just going to become Outlook.com and it goes away.
Yeah. Yep. Do you think, though, I wonder if they'll keep going, you know, once the next version. I think they will, right? So once they do the next version, they'll reintroduce another.
I agree. No, but I mean, but that's the reason they use the term. But yeah, I find that a little goofy myself. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is going to be rolling out in the next few weeks to everybody as an option in Outlook.com. So you'll see a little thing up in your right-hand corner of your inbox, and it'll say try the beta. And you can click on it and say try the beta or not now. It's just a toggle. You can go back and forth. And you'll immediately, if you select it, get to start trying out potential new features that might be included in the next version of Outlook.com. You tried it, right? Because there's a way to force it, right?
Yeah, I did. So I have a rich history of not getting the latest version of Outlook.com right
away.
Do
you?
So as it turned, never mentioned that before.
really, because half of Twitter remembered it. But there is a workaround for this that Tom Warren published on The Verge, and I decided to go for it because honestly, I have been thinking a lot lately about moving back to Outlook.com. And part of it's tied into my tip of the week, which we'll talk about later. But I really like the way this thing looks. I really do. In fact, the only issue I have with it right now is that not all of Outlook.com has been converted to this new style. The calendar, the people components, and some other stuff is still on the old style. And it's really jarring to go back and forth between the old and the new. And you might recall, first of all, the Outlook.com that everyone's using today took many years to come into existence. It was a really prolonged struggle to get that thing out the door. Yep. And part of the deal was that they had to align it with the Outlook on the web work that they're doing for Office 365 Commercial so that those two products kind of look and feel the same. And they do. You can put them side by side. They're almost identical now. But man, do they look out of date when you put them next to the new Outlook.com, which to me looks awesome, you know, the beta version. And it's just really attractive. And, you know, some of the new feature stuff are things that are never going to impact me. It kind of reminds me in a way of some of the stuff they put into the Skype client recently where, you know, the ability to do certain things, in this case, like add emoticons or animated GIFs and things like that. I'm not going to be sending emails like that. I do that on Skype. I don't need email for that. But I sort of appreciate that. The other thing they did that I thought was really nice was they made search more prominent, which is fine. It actually works exactly like it used to, but now it's just kind of up front and center, which is good. But the big thing to me is the photo edition. So it's called Photos or Photo Hub, depending on where you look. But there's this section of Outlook.com where you can see all of the photos that you've shared and that have been shared with you. And you can filter them by person. You can filter them by whether they're just your things that you've shared. And it's just a handy place because I think we all lose track of that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I got this thing from somebody, but I don't remember where it was, and it's hard to find it in an email search. And the ability to just go to a place and see that stuff, I think, is actually pretty cool. So, there's no Fluent design anywhere, which is great. it's a little less blocky looking than the current Outlook.com, if that makes sense. And to me, it just looks a little more modern, and attractive. So I like it. I don't have anything bad to say about it. Like I think I legit like it.
The thing is, if you do want to force it and not wait for Microsoft to push it to you, there are a bunch of caveats. Yes. And so one of them is if you follow the instructions and end up getting the new one and then you click on try the beta, then you can't get in after that. So don't click on that.
If you can wait until it appears for you, you'll get that little little toggle switch that comes up in the toolbar. If you can wait for that to appear, what you will gain is the ability to go back and forth between the shipping version of Outlook.com and the beta version at any time. You can flick that switch anytime you want. If you do the workaround and you go back to the shipping version from the beta by mistake or on purpose, it doesn't matter. Now you can't get back in the beta. Microsoft could fix that, but that's the case today, I guess. So just don't flick the switch. Don't flick the switch.
I know, because that's your instinct is, there it is. I'm going to click on that, right?
Yeah. Take your hand off the switch. No switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I like it. They've updated the settings. It's more modern looking. It's nice. It's kind of like If you use Chrome, they updated the settings in Chrome to be kind of a what's their design language called?
Material design.
Material design. Thank you. So it's kind of nice and specific to Google, and it looks good for that world. And then the Outlook.com thing, it's kind of like that. It doesn't look like that, but it kind of floats over the window, and it just has a nice effect. It's just really nice text, you know, really modern style. It's really well done.
Yeah. There's an application launcher, but I think that was there before, wasn't it? Except they added some new things to it. That's where, like, if you click on in the far left corner, you get the people and the calendar and all that.
It's a new design application launcher. So the current version is kind of a rectangular looking thing, and this is vertical, Yeah, but that's the thing. You click on people, and they're back in the 1990s again. It's like, whatever.
That's not good. Yeah,
and that's the thing. Like, yeah. I use the web calendar. I use the web email client, and I don't really screw around with contacts day to day. Obviously, they're just kind of there. But I actually just today, because somebody left my company, and she sent her new email address and phone number. I had to go into my contacts and edit that stuff, and I was like, oh man, like this is like this is just ancient looking. You know, it's weird. how out of date it looked to me, but they're going to fix that stuff. So they said, actually, I should say they are going to add new features over time. And they also said, yes, we're going to be touching the rest of it. So calendar, people, whatever, will all be updated as well.
Cool.
Yep.
Coolio. Are they using the new Microsoft sign-in experience?
Yes, they are. And actually, maybe this is exciting. Maybe someone could answer this question for me, because I've run into this a couple of times. I feel like I used to know this. If I want to go to Outlook.com, the consumer version, Outlook.com, I go to Outlook.com. That's the address. If I want to go to Outlook on the web, the thing that flashes through my brain is, well, I'll go to Office365.com. But Office365.com is this terrible promotional site for Office products. It has nothing to do with Office 365.
Yeah.
And actually, the correct address for the commercial version of Office 365, I thought it was portal.microsoft.com, but it's not.
No, it's
office.com. It's just office. No, that can't be right.
It is.
That's crazy. Is it?
No, it's crazy.
So Office 365 goes to Office and office.com goes to Office 365?
No, so when you go to office.com, it says sign in, and then you can sign into your work account.
No, so if I go to Office 365, what happens is I am logged into the consumer account, the Microsoft account.
Yeah.
From the menu off of my, the user picture, I can choose work account, work or school account, whatever it says. And then I get the login for Office 365 commercial, which is what I'm really looking for. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, there's an obvious place on the web to go for Outlook.com. Right. But as a user of Office 365, which is the majority of people using Office 365, not administrators, I don't understand why when I go to Office 365, it just doesn't log me into my account and just... You know,
I just go to office.com when I need to use it on the web.
And do you have it's not coming up for me for some reason, probably because I'm in Spain. But
really?
That's just kind of sitting there grinding away. Okay.
That's weird. That's what I do too. Yeah.
You go to office.com?
Or if I'm going to I can go to onenote.com if I want to do the OneNote thing, but yeah.
Yeah, most people are saying go to portal.office.com.
Okay, actually, you're right.
Office
okay, so
loaded right in for me. Yeah.
this is goofy. By the way, it worked. I got to the portal. That makes sense to me. Okay, so that made sense. Except that office.com should, to me, should show me office stuff. And office365.com should show me this. If you go to the web right now and go to office365.com, what you will find is a marketing website selling people on office products. And that's a little goofy to me.
Microsoft needs to steal that away. It's not even a Microsoft site.
No, it's not.
No, it is. It is.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
I'm getting a weird URL when I.
No, it pops over to products.office.com. And I'm seeing it in Spanish, so it's KRS con tu proximos.
Yeah, we have an EN-US, and that's a Microsoft thing. And then they get mad. I know, because they get mad at me for not using Edge.
Yeah.
Only Microsoft cares about that. What will you do with your next 365?
Is that what that means? It says no se puede.
No se puede.
Anywho, I find that to be a little... But that has nothing to do with anything. So, Microsoft has, like we just said, they unified the user experience for Outlook.com and Outlook on the web, which is the Office 365 commercial version of Outlook.com, if you will, or Exchange Online. And it doesn't mean that they're completely the same, although they have the same backends now. They serve different audiences, and of course the business version has all kinds of controls for that kind of stuff. But the UX is basically the same, and I think that's kind of cool because you can go back and forth between the two and you understand how they work. Microsoft to date has had different online sign-in experiences for the consumer and business product services, including Office 365, Azure, and so forth, and then the consumer products like OneDrive, OneNote, Outlook.com. So they've created a single sign-in experience. Whether it's exactly the same behind the scenes is unclear, but you can sign in with a Microsoft account or an MSA, or you can sign in with a Work / whatever, you know, Azure Active Directory, whatever it is, account. And the consumer version is live. It's there. If you go to, I don't know, account.microsoft.com, for example, I think you actually will see that.
Or you could just go experience. Outlook.com. Like, there are Outlook.com. A lot of places you'll see. Yep.
Yeah. And then on the business end, when I wrote about this, I hadn't seen it on the business end, but since then I have. And so, like I've been saying, I've been trying to go to Office 365 to sign into my business account. I used to get this kind of goofy two-column view with a cartoon graphic on one side, and it was signed into my work or university account, whatever. And now you get the same exact experience. And so you just type in the email address. They call it kind of a two-screen experience, because on the first screen you type in your email address, and then you hit enter. It doesn't really change the screen, but a new window comes up. And then you can type in your password, or you can do the app type sign-in like you might do with two-factor authentication. Some people don't like that, but actually what they found is that this is a higher success rate for signing in for more people. It's also more secure for various reasons. And I think it's awesome. I think it works great.
It looks nice. The problem is, I don't know if you saw this on your site, Petri.com, Tony Redman found, and I've seen this on a couple other sites too now, a bunch of people who use Office 365 right after this new sign-in was introduced started having all kinds of problems because some people have designed custom sign-in experiences for their users, and this suddenly just showed up and they didn't know it was coming. Or, you know, Microsoft did warn them, administrators, that it was coming, but not everyone knew, and then it started breaking people's sign-in experiences. And then there were people on Office 2010 and SharePoint who started having all kinds of other problems because of this. So it hasn't been the smoothest rollout, but hopefully they're going to fix that.
Yep. Also, I've heard from approximately 20 people that the correct address for signing into Office 365 is portal.office.com. So thank you.
I never knew that. I just always go to office.com.
the cake is alive.
I find it goofy that it's not something simple. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's all.
If you're signed in and you go to office.com, it'll put you where you want to be. Right?
I probably.
It does for me.
Yeah, yeah. It does for me, too. I mean, I didn't even know about the portal because I never used it.
There are strange interactions between Microsoft accounts and, let's just call them, corporate accounts, for lack of a better term.
Right.
One of those things being that your corporate account can also be an MSA.
Right.
And so when you sign in, I haven't tried it, but if you sign in with one of those accounts from this new unified sign-in experience, it will almost certainly prompt you to ask you whether you intend to sign in as a consumer or a work university account, however it's worded.
Okay.
Yep.
Fair enough. Fair enough, Paul Tharot. Polly boy. Skype for business.
Yeah. We've been talking a lot about on the show about changes Microsoft's been making to Skype Consumer. And every time we ask them, so what about Skype for Business? We've been getting no comments. And I think I know why now. It looks like at Ignite, which is Microsoft's big IT pro show coming at the end of September, they're going to tell us what they're doing with Skype for Business. I went and trolled through all the site sessions for Skype for Business. There's a ton of them for the conference. And I found out a couple interesting things when I was looking at the session descriptions. I don't know if they've removed these since I found them or not, but one of the things is people have been asking me, is there still going to be another version of Skype for Business Server on premises? Because the SharePoint team's been very vocal about that. They've said, you know what? It's not the end of the road for SharePoint. We're going to do more versions of SharePoint Server. But Skype for Business never said that. And right. The answer is yes, there is a vNext, and they're going to talk about this at Ignite. So we don't know what the features are going to be in this new server, but it's been a while since they updated Skype for Business on-premises server. The last time they did was 2015. So there will be a vNext. And they're also making some naming changes because, you know, it's not Microsoft without changing names of products. So they are changing the thing they currently call Cloud PBX, which is a high-end feature of Skype for Business, to Microsoft Phone System, which is going to be very confusing.
Sorry.
So the set of features currently called Cloud PBX that are part of Skype for Business Online are now going to be called Microsoft Phone System going forward.
So Microsoft's getting back into phones. You heard it here live, folks.
It's the wrong kind of phones. It's SIP
phones.
Yeah,
not that phone. Right.
PBXs. They're going way back.
Right. Then they're renaming the set of services that they currently call PSTN Calling to Calling Plan. So I don't know exactly what these name changes mean, but a lot of people have been speculating if Microsoft might be kind of reining in Skype for Business a little bit and saying, you know what, this is going to be our phone platform. And Teams is going to become the thing that you use if you're a business user for instant messaging and real-time presence and the other things that Skype for Business currently do. Right. I don't know if that is what they will do.
This raises some serious issues. So, for example, will I be able to get sprinkles on Teams?
Right. Sprinkles? I would say the answer is no.
You mean like Jimmy's? Then, you mean, what do you mean
yes,
sprinkles?
Yes, I do.
You do.
Okay. I don't like this system, Mary Jo. I need sprinkles.
I know. You like the emojis and the GIFs and all that. You're that kind of a guy.
Skype is just it's one sprinkle away from being perfect.
Well, the good news for many people, based on what I'm looking at in the session list, is they are going to try to clarify when to use Teams and when to use Skype for Business, because I think that's very confusing right now to many people, and they don't understand when you should use one or the other. That's true of many Office products.
This is good timing, too, because they just finished integrating Skype into everything on the commercial side.
I know.
Literally, you know, we've invented this new product. What do you want to just replace this other thing?
I mean, Skype is integrated in Teams, right? I mean, I just mean, it's going to be interesting how they try to clarify this. Will they do a post like we just saw with Windows as a Service in a nutshell? And they'll say, hey, here's the little matrix. Use this when you want to do this. Use this when you want to do that. That would be very welcome if they could do that. I'm very curious what they're going to say at Ignite about this, because there are tons of Skype for Business sessions there, and we haven't heard anything about this product.
It's not just
really,
it's not just Skype Teams overlap, right? It's kind of SharePoint overlap too, right? I mean, Teams is kind of getting its tendrils into a lot of places that are well established.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah. We'll be there, by the way. We're going to be doing Windows Weekly live from Ignite. Right.
By the way, Jason Howard, North Face Hiker, has provided a little bit of color to the bug that has caused the meltdown at the Windows Insider Build Lab. And he just says that it's not a security bug, so we can talk about it. This particular bug would break some dialog menus, printing, and some settings. So. I guess it's serious, but not like a security serious.
Yeah.
It's a showstopper.
Yeah, well, it absolutely meets that definition. Yeah.
It's a showstopper, kids.
Stop the show.
Stop the show.
Not this show.
Not our show. Never. Nothing stops our show. We are bug free.
I can talk about my cat all day if nothing happens. It's fine.
You betcha. All right. All right. Yeah, we ran through all our material too quickly. I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, it was kind of a slow week.
It was.
Do you want to answer some listener questions?
This we
is
could.
Always a recipe for disaster.
It is.
Yep. Let's go.
All right, listeners.
Can I have some ham, please?
Listeners, while Paul Thurrott steps outside for some ham.
Yep.
Okay. I'm just looking at the chat. Tell Mary Jo about this, and it will not matter what operating system she uses. Editpad.org. Oh. That's a website. You could edit your your stuff on a web. They're still talking.
She needs a
maybe
a web service.
Last week's chat.
Right. No, you know what? Ever since that show we did where we talked about Notepad, people continue to send me email and tweets with suggestions to replace Notepad.
Fascinated.
Right. There's no reason to replace something that's perfect.
That's right.
Come on, guys. Come on, anything. Bueller, is MS still getting cash from the sale of every Android phone? Do you know that? Asks Friendly Manitoba.
Well, yeah, of course. So, I mean, not from every single Android phone, but they have licensing agreements with most of the major Android phone device developers, not just phones.
The rumor was it was roughly $5 a phone, which would be a, billion-dollar business.
That was the rumor. Yeah.
There was a couple of years ago where, we did the math, and they were clearly making more money from that than they were making from Windows Phone.
Well, that wouldn't be much. Hard to...
No. Yeah. It wouldn't be hard. Yeah.
It's a low bar, but yes. Yeah, right. Definitely.
The Geek says Microsoft should release classic Microsoft Gaming Collection with games from all the old versions of Windows. Solitaire from XP. Mine... Sweeper from Vista, that like kind it. Of thing. I like it.
Yeah. It's not the next billion-dollar business, but I support it.
The Rich Woods asks, can Magneto lift Thor's hammer?
So if that is literally the Rich Woods,
he
should be doing is playing with his virtual reality headset, not bothering us on Windows Weekly.
I think he's bugging you. I think he's intentionally bugging you.
I know what this is about.
What is it about?
Well,
I made fun of him because of his Windows virtual reality headset.
The Mighty Pen wants to know if there'll be discounts on the 1S when the Squint Scorpio 1X comes out November 11th.
No, I don't think so. The 1S is already really priced correctly. It would just depend on whether or not Sony ever drops the prices on their consoles.
Why would you need Skype on a server? What are you talking to the server about?
That's awesome. Let us discuss briefly how businesses work.
Okay, never mind. Thor's hammer may be metal, but that doesn't make it magnetic, says Tenacious Tech.
That's amazing. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't be affected by a magnetic field, which it would be, which makes this valid.
So brilliant. I sell printers at my retail store. Any word about Windows 10S working with printers?
Yeah. So I only have a limited range of hardware to work from. I've been doing a series on Windows 10 and the various aspects related to that. And so there's some interesting things related to drivers because you can't install the driver sets that most companies make, right? It's going to depend on the driver. So, on the printer. So on the printers I've tested, what I've seen is Windows has built into it what so-called class drivers. They're the things that are kind of built into the box or serviced through Windows Update that provide basic functionality. What you're not going to get are those third-party utilities that run on top of that that provide you with all the little settings and so forth. And this is a problem with other hardware devices too, like scanners or whatever. I think for most people's needs, yeah, it's going to work just fine. If you have particular needs, like where you want to go, like I want to do edge-to-edge printing on glossy paper with specific settings and all that kind of stuff, you might not have that. Although, oddly enough, I have a Dell network-attached laser printer, like a CN3130 kind of, I think it's the model. Dell provides a UWP-based utility for the printer, and it doesn't actually help in the process of printing, but it has all these utilities for the printer, including such things as monitoring the level of toner and then allowing you to order toner from Dell when you get low.
Of course.
It's a valuable service. I mean, it's actually like a good thing to have. So, although I've discovered that Dell toner is actually magical and never runs out no matter how low it goes. But I've had good luck with hardware devices. And so, things like mice and keyboards, obviously those things work. Or you plug in like a USB-based Ethernet adapter. Works fine. These are all class drivers. So there's a printer on your network. You plug a printer in via USB. It's going to work fine. Microsoft Xbox One controller. You plug it in or you connect it with Bluetooth. It works fine.
I told you, though, when I had the XS laptop, I plugged my printer into it, and I couldn't get it to print. I don't know why.
So I was really confused by that, because the truth is, I feel like I could have gotten that to work for you.
You could have.
I think there are two levels to it. So I'm surprised that you found a printer that didn't work just natively, like just worked. But
I know.
There are also kind of generic ways to print, especially over laser print or whatever, that probably would have worked fine, honestly. There's no way to test it because it's gone, but...
I know. Maybe I don't have it now.
Someday, you know, we'll give it a shot. We'll see what happens. But
I mean, it acted like it was going to work. Like when I plugged it in, it made that sound. What's that sound called when you plug it in?
The printer startup sound. Oh, you mean the Windows sound? Yeah, the device sound. Yeah.
Right. And then I was like, okay. And I tried all different things. And it's just a generic HP laser printer. It's not any kind of fancy printer. And I was like, nope, can't get it to go.
I had found, so, you know, right before I came to Barcelona, I tried a bunch of devices. I tried all of this stuff in my house, you know, and so one of the things that didn't work was a Canon, I don't remember the model or name, but it was a Canon scanner, fairly recent. I bought it a couple of years ago, within 2 years. It requires a very goofy kind of Win32 app install to do the, you know, it has its own little weird way of doing things, but Windows 10 has built, actually doesn't have any really built-in scanner thing. It has a scanner and fax app that dates back to Windows Vista. There's a UWP app called Scanner that Microsoft provides in the store. Neither one of these things could see the scanner. There's no way to scan with this. It just doesn't work. And that's the type of problem that you ran into with your printer. But I actually believe that the success rate of, you know, printers past, I don't know, 5, 10 years is going to be super high on Windows 10S.
I know. Just I was really surprised it didn't work.
I didn't realize that there were no drivers. Why didn't I leave Windows 10S on here?
Well, it
would have been useful about it.
Like,
there's built-in drivers, right? The class drivers.
Yeah, built-in class drivers. So think about, here's one we're all familiar with. So you get a Logitech C920 camera, and you plug it into your computer. And it works right away. Like Windows has class drivers built into that thing. It works fine. But you'll get a little prompt that says, would you like to finish installing the drivers for this thing? When you do that, it actually downloads a Logitech Win32 desktop application that I'm not sure if it updates the drivers per se, but what it does do is you provide you with this kind of control panel that gives you control over the camera. In fact, I could probably access it from Skype if I tried hard enough because you can get to it that way because I'm using that camera right now. So I will completely script this podcast by going to webcam settings. And I'm not on Windows 10S on this computer. And what runs is something called Logitech Webcam Properties. It's it doesn't scale very well, so it's a really poorly written Win32 app, which I cannot see because I have 50-year-old eyes and the text is all like this big. But on Windows 10S, you would not get this because this is a desktop application. Can't get it. Now, there are things that are useful in there. This thing does automatic face tracking. You can flip the video image. You can adjust the color and the warmth and all kinds of other things. There's a reason this thing exists. It's kind of a nice thing to have. But would the camera still work in Windows 10S? Yeah, almost certainly. You just wouldn't get that. And, you know, it makes sense on a number of levels. Windows 10S is a more basic form of computing. It's supposed to be a little bit more like a Chromebook kind of thing in some ways. It's designed to be simpler. These third-party utilities are often goofy and one-off and different from everything else on your computer, and they have their own stupid update routines, and they're all kind of unique. And the way things work in Windows 10S is the way kind of things should work. You should go into settings. You should go to the devices area. You should go to your webcam, and you should look. You know, that's where it should be, right? And that's where it will be, you know, in Windows 10S.
Luna Lovegood wonders, do you know anything about when Windows 10S will be out in VLSC for EDU? Also, Mary Jo, you should use Vim as a real person.
She lost us on the second.
What is VLSC?
Volume Licensing Service Center. So I thought Windows 10S was now available. Well, I know it's available to education testers, but... How are they going to make it available to colleges and students?
I actually thought that hadn't occurred quite yet, but that was coming in August or something like that. Let me see if I can find it.
Look. Yeah, and so, would that be something, or does, I can't remember? Does Windows 10S have to come preloaded on a new machine?
I think so.
Or
no?
No, you can get it. They offer it through MSDN.
In other words, for you, not to consumers.
But that's a tester's version,
not consumers. You can't buy
that's
it.
That's just testing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not an MSDN member. I can't get it. Right.
I mean, I'm not clear if they're ever going to make it available to just anybody to put on hardware.
So I actually think they will eventually do this, but I think it's a phase-in period, right? And so, I just said this somewhere. Maybe we talked about this last week, but back in the 1990s, one of the big complaints about like the Netscape thing was that it was like we're constantly in beta, and Google came along, and Google services in the early days, especially, was like we're always in beta. We're running a beta, like that's what we're doing. And I actually had someone from Microsoft tell me recently, you know, because I complained a lot about Windows 10. He says, "Look, you got to kind of understand, like, this thing is basically a beta right now. This part where we kind of put it out to the public is, this is where we start to get feedback, and we're going to change it based on, you know, what we hear and that kind of thing." And so, to answer the question, as far as the availability, this doesn't have to do with volume licensing specific, but as far as education customers, I assume that's what that means. Is that they'll be able to access Windows 10S alongside an update assistant tool. And that kind of suggests they're going to be able to put it on whatever they want. Now, it's probably for testing purposes, right? I mean,
I think testing. Yeah.
I think that's the point of it, not to deploy it onto machines.
Right.
But this is kind of early days. And I think what they want to do is just kind of figure out how this makes sense. And I think over time they will roll it out to a bigger audience. I think a big part of the deployment of Windows 10 includes giving it to the insiders and letting them put it on different hardware.
They did make it available to...
And one of our listeners has given me a Microsoft website that does list Windows 10S accessory compatibility, including all
printers
and scanners. Brother, Canon, Dell, Epson, HP, Konica, Minolta.
Oh, click on Canon if you don't mind.
You want to go work with yours?
Yeah. Well, I know it doesn't.
No.
There you go.
I got to get redirected to a support page.
The page you're trying to access does not exist.
Well, I have to tell them where I am, and they apparently are confused about that. So the following... Okay. Oh, this isn't really a list. The following manufacturers provide web pages that discuss use of specific printers and scanners. Mm-hmm. That sucks. That's not
the point of a class driver is that what you have is the functionality you need to make that sound that you heard, right? Which is we've discovered the device, and now we're going to install something. And that thing we're installing is coming from Windows Update, right? And or, you know, some of it could be on the disk, but maybe there's a newer version up in the web, and they'll give you the latest version. It's basic functionality. It's the thing that allows you to plug in a mouse, and it just works, right? The mouse cursor starts moving as soon as you turn on your mouse. You don't have to wait for the multi-step wizard to install the drivers. Like, it just works. You know, it's nice. Unfortunately, Windows 10S, that's all you get. Like, that's the end of it. Like, mouse moves around and you're done.
Virgil says, well, since Magneto can manipulate magnetic fields, he would be able to move the hammer no matter where it locked itself into place. He can lift it if deemed worthy by Odin. The Hulk and Beta Ray Bill have both wielded it at full power when acting in a worthy manner as deemed by Odin. Right.
By the way, that was my point originally, and I agree with that 100%.
How will Microsoft handle hardware that can no longer be updated to the latest Windows 10 build? Will users be notified as such? Will it silently fail each time an update is attempted? What is going to happen? You'll just be blocked, right?
Yeah, you just don't see it. I mean, it's...
They're smart enough to say, we're not going to update this machine.
Well, in other words, does Microsoft owe... We got to kind of put ourselves in the place of a normal user, right? Someone like... anyone listening to this show who had a computer and was going to Windows Update and was trying to install the latest version of Windows 10 and not getting it would become confused and concerned over time. And then maybe they would download the ISO. And then they would get a message, right? That makes sense. But let's say you're a normal consumer. You're not going to Windows Update looking for updates. In fact, you find these updates to be problematic. You don't want, you know, like these things are just interruptions. I don't think you care about the latest version of Windows 10. And so... I honestly, as much as it pains me, in some ways, the way that Microsoft's doing it right now is the correct way. Just don't supply it to the automatic Windows Update process. And if the user tries to manually force it, you can put up a warning that says, yeah, this isn't going to work. Here's why. Mm-hmm. And here's why is always a hardware incompatibility reason.
Plus, they said on some of their support sites, as they figure out things that are blocking certain machines from getting the latest Windows 10 feature updates. They will be posting there about that when it's unblocked, right?
I also left out the crucial part of the process, which is where Microsoft blames the hardware maker for the problem.
And here from Roland, we actually have proof that Magneto could wield Thor's hammer.
Yeah, I believe this was in issue 13 of the 1967 original Thor. Yep.
Oh, man. This is getting more traffic than the notepad replacement.
Proving my theory about magnetism.
Yeah. Yeah. There seems to be a way, ask BJM Tech, to extend Windows Vista security updates by manually installing Windows Server 2008 updates. Do you recommend this, Paul Thurrott?
I'm going to roll up a newspaper and I'm going to hit you in the nose and I'm going to say, no.
Stop it. Don't do it.
No.
Don't do it. You're going to see, will we see Surface AMD processors at any point in Microsoft hardware, you think?
I think we will see Surface ARM processor devices.
ARM first. ARM sooner than AMD.
Although, there's a certain animosity burning behind the scenes at Microsoft and Intel these days. And I guess I wouldn't leave anything out of the equation. That's possible. AMD just did kind of rise from circling the drain and came out with some processors that people really like.
It's rising. It's
picture Microsoft.
Awesome.
I don't know anything about that, but that would be
Did
really
you see that for the first time in years, The Verge laptop, the best laptop, was this vindicating Mary Jo Foley, the Surface laptop? First time
no,
they didn't
not
recommend
vindicating
in years.
Me.
Oh, vindicating Paul. Some one of you was right.
Paul liked the hardware.
Paul liked the hardware. You liked the software. The first time they haven't picked a Mac in years. Now, I would completely disagree with them that the Surface laptop at its price point and with the untested Alcantara design is the laptop of the year, but it's a nice, mighty nice laptop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think there are better Windows laptops.
I agree.
What's
neat, I have to say, I don't know why anybody buy a Mac laptop anymore. I really don't, except that you have to run Mac OS for some reason.
Well, for the touch bar, obviously. So I was in a Fnac today, and Fnac is it's a French version of Best Buy. It's incredible. In fact, it's kind of awesome how retail here is still exactly the same as it used to be in the United States in the 1980s. But multi-store, escalators, electronics everywhere. It's incredible. But I was playing around with a MacBook Pro, and I was like, it's a beautiful machine. But then I kept hitting the screen to close a window, and then I was like, oh, right, it's a Mac. You can't close the screen. You can't touch the screen on the Mac because it's a Mac.
Arthur has posted an article that I'm going to try. From Windows Central on how Windows 10 Pro users can now side grade to 10S easily. I don't know what the technology is. It's an extremely short article. I don't know. There's a tool, the upgrade tool. I wonder who it comes from. Is this from Microsoft? Yeah, it is.
Really?
Okay, this is just an installer for Windows 10S. This can't.
Yeah, but you found that like a public installer for Windows 10S. Now the issue here is going to be getting a licensing key.
It's docs.microsoft.com. But if I already have a 10S Surface laptop,
you should be fine. Like that would install
it's
on
licensed
there.
Licensed for 10S,
It would activate. Yes, but if you had a different laptop and you used your existing product key, it would just put Pro in there.
Right. Mm. So because
into a weird area
I will
there.
Try doing that because I realize now it's probably useful for me to have a 10S machine.
You could totally go. You can. There's a Surface restore image you can download, Leo. That will get
course.
You back.
Of course.
Oh, but you want to sideload it. You want to
want to sideload it. I'll do a restore image. I don't.
Yeah, just do that. Just go to the Surface support. You can get that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Friendly Manitoba says the whole Magneto Thor thing is completely moot with Fox owning the X-Men rights. It's just not going to be an issue. This is an interesting one from Mr. B. Will Windows 10S become the future OEM distribution, then making you pay to upgrade to Windows 10 Pro?
So,
that's an intriguing idea.
Yeah, the first time I talked to Microsoft about Windows 10S, that was the first thing I said. This thing has a gotcha moment quality to it that you guys are going to have to be careful about. And they get that. And they were talking about the need to educate users about what it meant and what it was, and, you know, making it easy. And of course, that's the reason why it's free, you know, during this period. And you could look at this free period as kind of being the beta I talked about earlier too, right? Yes, that's a problem. But the problem for Windows 10S is that no OEMs have bought into it on a consumer level at all. None. And I've talked to PC makers about this, and it's basically a wait and see kind of thing. And, you know, Windows 10S.
Except those older PCs that were kind of retrofitted with Windows 10S, right? The back to school things.
I'm just talking for education. You go to Lenovo.com and you configure ThinkPad and Windows 10S as an option. I mean, things need to happen before that can happen.
Yeah.
One is that users need to be asking for it, which they're not, never will be. But the other thing is, you know, Lenovo and Dell and HP and everyone else, they have this whole support infrastructure that they create for their computers. And a lot of that stuff relies on Win32 technologies. And so they really have to start over from scratch to make that stuff happen on Windows 10S. And that's actually a serious engineering effort. In some cases, might not be possible. And so I don't know how the agreement works with Microsoft. It's actually very possible that they might allow those companies to put certain desktop applications on their own systems because they need to be there. It's possible that they will not allow that at all. I really don't know. But there's a reason this isn't happening right away, and actually there are probably many reasons, but what I've heard, what they've said to me is it really is wait and see, and it's because they're just trying to judge the demand of it. Surface laptop is going to sell really well. There's no doubt about it. It's a really popular machine, but the thing Microsoft's never going to come out and admit to anybody is that 99-something% of the people who get that computer are going to upgrade it to Windows 10 Pro.
I would love to know that number.
I would too. We all, you know, but
we never will. But yeah, you're right. But
no,
the reason
no
I think
they spent $1,300 on a laptop that can't run Windows applications, like, that doesn't make any sense.
Unless you're somebody like me,
like a farmer.
I don't need them. Like a what do you, farmer? Like, I'm not a farmer.
I don't know.
I think there is a group of people who will be able to get by with Windows 10S who do like just basic stuff. But do you need a laptop like Windows 10, like a Surface laptop, if you're that person? Not really, right?
No, exactly.
Right. But I think the reason Microsoft built Surface laptop was to try to show OEMs that there is a reason to put Windows 10S on something that's not just a low-end crap.
Yeah. You know, I will say this. You know, I've complained a lot about the quality of the apps in the store, which is the big problem for Windows 10S. There are alternatives, and there are versions of the future where this kind of thing works itself out. You know, one of the things you can do is take advantage of web apps, and web apps in many cases can be a lot more sophisticated than the store apps. And so, for example, that newelec.com is a more sophisticated email client than the mail client that's built into Windows 10. It's interesting. Sure. The problem is today you have to run it in an Edge tab. And so what you don't get is this kind of native application experience. In a future version of Windows 10, Edge will support progressive web apps, and I'm hoping will support this kind of more native experience. Those things will be delivered through the store. And so it's the Edge engine running a web app through a store app container, right? So it looks like an app. I actually think that kind of thing is going to be very exciting, and I think makes Windows 10S a lot more interesting. It's just that today, in summer 2017, this kind of thing is not viable. So we have crappy store apps, we have great web apps, but they have to run in these in a browser, and like it just kind of ruins the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But the little shining light is, I was looking at the game situation today actually on Windows 10S, and actually, if you go to the store on Windows 10S, you can go to the store on Windows 10 Pro too, and you look at the games that are available in the store. Unless you're a hardcore gamer, of course, you're not getting Windows 10S. But, I mean, for normal people, where gaming is kind of a hobby, it's something you do on the side, it's not the primary use of the computer. Actually, that's not too bad. It's not that bad. And if the app situation kind of looked like the game situation did, this conversation would be very different. So there's hope on a few fronts. One is that the store app thing improves, or that more and more desktop apps are converted right through the desktop bridge, and that this web app thing becomes more sophisticated, which Microsoft has said it will. And I'm hoping Eddie and I can hear more about this because it's not coming in the fall creators update, but maybe in the next update for the spring.
Yeah.
We could get there. You know, it's not impossible. Look at me, shining ray of hope.
I know.
That's the best you're ever going to get from Paul.
Well, he needs to eat more ham.
You never know.
You never know.
The sun goes down here like 10 o'clock at night. I don't know. You never know.
Thanks to everybody in the chat room for the questions. I love doing that, and we just don't usually have time. But nice. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, the back of the book, Paul's tips, Mary Jo's picks, and beer. But first.
and ham, Leo.
And ham. You know, I have to look at Blue Apron to see if they have any ham recipes. Now I'm craving ham. They might have a chicken cordon bleu or something. They tend to do a little bit more elegant stuff. But I love Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers amazing meals to your home. All the ingredients you need, plus the recipe and all the cooking information. You make it yourself because it's that way. There's a lot of advantages to that. It's fresh. It smells good. And I mean, the house just fills. Everybody's so excited. Oh, the Blue Apron. Dad's cooking. And man, you know, you impress people. And even if you've never cooked before, you're going to make amazing meals that people are going to say, you made this from scratch? Yep, I did it with my Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. We get three a week. Sometimes we'll send one of them to Lisa's mom and dad, who are older, and they love it. We'll kind of prep it for them, put it all together, do all the chopping and cutting and stuff so they can just throw it in the pan, and they just love it. We always order every week from the menu. Now, there's two different plans. We get the two-person plan, even though there's three of us, because there's usually enough for three people. If you have a family of four, you might want to get the family plan, and that has more kid-friendly ingredients, too, like, let's see, seared chicken and blistered cherry tomatoes with garlic mashed potatoes. Now, who wouldn't like that? Bucatini pasta. I love bucatini. And Heritage Globe tomato sauce with marinated squash and fresh mozzarella. That's in the family plan. Heirloom tomato lamb and beef burgers with loaded cheesy potatoes. Thing is, once you make one of these, how about this? Chicken tagine. You see, you kind of get your choice. You're going to pick three out of these six. And maybe you go, oh, let's get one simple one. But then I want to stretch. I'm going to get the chicken tagine with cherry tomatoes, dates, and couscous. See, this is my kind of meal. They also recommend a wine with it, which is kind of neat. Lisa's on the wine pairing plan. So they recommended a delicious vermillon white wine with the chicken tagine. Wouldn't that be a nice summer dish? Less than $10 per person per meal. They're always seasonal, which is nice because you're getting fresh ingredients. Blue Apron purchases from over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. Sustainable, delicious food, the high-quality stuff you'd buy yourself. And I have to say, I've never been disappointed by any of the ingredients in my Blue Apron box. They come refrigerated, never frozen, and always delicious. Miso butter salmon and lo mein noodles with cucumber and charmed tomatoes. Meatball pizza with fresh mozzarella cheese and charmed tomatoes. And by giving you exactly the right ingredient, exactly the right amount of each ingredient for your recipe, they're reducing food waste. You don't have, end up with weird little bits and pieces in your fridge. And their freshness guarantee promises every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right. And they're very good, very, very good about that. They're a great company. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase plus free shipping when you go to blueapron.com/windows. Every time I cook Blue Apron, as I said, we do it a few times a week, I learn a new ingredient, or like I did frika the other day, and I put dates in it, and oh my gosh, it was good. And now I know how to cook it, and I'll do it again. That's the thing. You're without knowing it, you're kind of learning new techniques, broadening your repertoire, and if you've never cooked before, you're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Remember, your first three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping at blueapron.com/windows. blueapron.com/windows. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Paul Thurrott's cooking up a storm there in Barcelona.
Actually, we are cooking after the podcast, but I will get to that later.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah. Sorry.
Your tip of the week?
Yeah. So I kind of investigated this topic for a specific reason, and it's I've come up with a solution for the thing I was looking for. But actually, what I found is that there's a better use for this thing out kind of in the real world. And so everyone who works with Microsoft products has a Microsoft account, right? And you typically would have started this account maybe when you signed into Hotmail for the first time back in the 1990s, or you created your Xbox Live account, or maybe you joined Skype or whatever it was. But at some point, you went to Microsoft and said, I want an email address, or I already have an email address, right? Maybe you came in with your own, and I'm going to supply a password, and this thing's going to become my Microsoft account. Now, for someone like me, my Microsoft account dates back to roughly 2001, or maybe it was 2002. But whenever Xbox Live started on the original Xbox, which I think was the year after Xbox, so let's say probably 2002, I started my original Microsoft account, Thurrott at Hotmail.com. Hotmail.com is kind of it's an older address, right? It's kind of ancient these days. It's kind of like an AOL.com address. It's kind of uncool. But it is my Microsoft account. And so all of the games and apps that I purchased on the Xbox, the Xbox 360, the Xbox One, are tied to this account. All of the apps and content that I bought through Windows 10 in the store is tied to this account. So I kind of have to cart this thing around. You know, if I sign into Windows 10 with a Microsoft account, I'm using this account. I mean, that's just the way it is. The thing is, the Microsoft account supports this notion of aliases. And aliases back in the day could be more things than they can be now. But basically, let's say aliases for the most part are other email addresses. You can also associate phone numbers as aliases. I don't know anyone who signs up with a phone number, but you could do that. And before recently, you could also use a Skype name. Like my Skype name was P. Thurrott or whatever. I could use that as an alias for my Microsoft account, although that's gone away. They don't know. Actually allow that anymore. The thing that most people may not understand is that you can create an alias and then make it your primary alias, thus deprecating, because we're going to use that word again, your original email address. And so in my case, for example, I might have a custom domain, or I might want just a more modern outlook.com or whatever Microsoft type address that I want to use as my primary alias as my Microsoft account, and I can just promote that thing to my primary alias. So I just did this, but in my case, the thing I promoted was a custom domain name, a custom domain address, I guess, because earlier this year I signed up for Outlook.com Premium, and this is, I don't want to get too involved here because it's kind of a convoluted discussion, but the short version of this is, if you sign up for Outlook.com Premium, which is a version of Outlook.com where they give you five accounts and access, the ability to use a custom domain name, which I wanted to use, and there are other features too, but let's just say those are the two basic ones. I want to use that new email address, paul@customdomain.com, has to be associated with an existing Microsoft account, thurrott@hotmail.com, which is exactly what I did. So over time, I thought to myself, you know, this is kind of interesting. What if I went to Windows 10 or the Xbox or one of my mobile apps or whatever it was, and I wanted to sign in with Paulette, whatever my custom domain name.com is? What happens? And what happens is you actually sign in to Thurrott@hotmail.com. That's the way it works, because that's the primary account. It's the same account. They're the same. They're two names, but they're the same thing. So when you create a custom domain and a custom account on Outlook.com Premium, what you're doing is creating an Outlook.com or a Microsoft account alias. That's what it is. And so over time, I thought, well, could I make that alias my Microsoft account? Like, could I just use that? When I sign into Outlook.com, I want to see the premium name, you know, the custom domain name. And actually, you can. You change it into you change that name to be your primary alias. And so that's the kind of, there's probably about five people on earth who need that. But I think there's a much bigger audience of people out there who have some old hotmail.com or whatever account name, and they want to keep all their stuff. They have an Office 365 subscription attached to it. They have OneDrive storage attached to it. They have content they bought back from Zune that's still in their account from, you know, this music that they can still download. Or they have movies they bought through the Microsoft Movies and TVs app or whatever it is. I want to still access all of that content, but I don't want to use this old email address. The way to fix that is with an alias, and then you make that alias your primary alias. So anyway, if that didn't make sense to you, I get it. it's a little convoluted. And I have to say, when it comes to the Microsoft account, one of the things I struggle with, not just on the site, but even in the Windows 10 book, for example, is I almost feel like what we need is a Microsoft account primer of some kind, like Microsoft account 101, where you kind of lay out here, like, first of all, security. You got to do two-factor authentication. Here's how you do that. Chapter 2, aliases. Here's why they're important. You know, here's how they work. And, you know, and maybe someday I'll write that because those books are so lucrative. But but it's one of those important kind of foundational things. And even myself, just using this thing every day, I kind of had forgotten that this was a thing. And actually, I feel like it can help a lot of people. So if that didn't make sense to you, you know, it's okay. I did write an article on the site, so you can go find it there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say it. I'm not sure if anyone's visualizing why this is awesome, but it is actually kind of awesome. For the app pick, this week, Spotify arrived on Xbox One, and that's actually kind of a huge deal. This was not something that we knew was coming. This past week, all of a sudden, there were some indications it was coming, and it did just arrive. It's not the same thing we have in Windows 10. Remember, in the Windows 10 store, we have the desktop app that's been containerized as a desktop app. But the Spotify app for Xbox One is a new from the ground up UWP app. And, you know, it's designed to be simple and work with the controller and all that kind of stuff. And it works with Spotify Connect. If you're a Spotify user, this is the type of thing you're going to be very happy about. And so one of the unique features you get on Xbox One is that you can actually replace the soundtracks of games with soundtracks from, like, playlists and so forth from Spotify. So that's actually kind of cool. So obviously you can just use it to play music, but you can change the music and games to be your own playlist if you want. So that's kind of a neat thing. And then just as a bonus pick, because I know Mary Jo is such a fan, Skype for Android, awesome, picked up a new dark theme, allowing it to match the capabilities of the Windows 10 client in that regard. One of the big complaints about Skype for Android when they came up with a new client, and also Skype for iOS as well, was that it's black text and a white background, and then lots of little color squiggles and things. Microsoft has heard the complaints. They're working to address them. I think part of the way they address them is to allow people to turn off some of the more animated nonsense that stuff, you know, a lot of people don't like. But one of the other ways is to allow a dark theme, which a lot of people prefer. And so the iOS version will be getting it soon. But if you're using Skype on Android, you can get that now. It's already available. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Thank you, Paul Thurrott. To Mary Jo Foley we go for our enterprise pick of the week.
So I don't know how I stumbled onto this blog this week. I was just looking at a bunch of TechNet blogs, I think. But there's a TechNet blog called Office 365 Weekly. Hmm. And I had just never found this blog before, but it's awesome. Because Paul and I talk all the time about how it's really hard to keep up with what's changing in Office 365, even though there's a roadmap, even though Microsoft does these monthly big blog posts. But this site, which you can find by going to TechNet and looking for Office 365 Weekly, or the shorter URL is blogs.technet.microsoft.com/skywriter, for some reason, SKYRITER. And the person who's writing this blog is compiling all kinds of things that are going on with Office 365, especially that administrators, Office 365 administrators need to know. So he updates this on some cases weekly, some cases monthly, and he's even now starting to put some placeholders in there for changes that you need to know about for 2018 and 2020. And it's a great consolidated resource for you as an Office 365 administrator who wants to make sure you don't miss any of the changes that Microsoft's making that could impact your tenant or your environment. Yes.
Well, that one you just noted is amazing.
Right?
It's amazing because they, you know, Microsoft announced this But yeah. You kind of forget about it because life moves on.
Yep.
Starting in 2020, Office 365 Pro Plus or Office Perpetual in mainstream support will be required to connect to Office 365 services.
Right. So you've seen a lot of people misreport this in the past, saying you'll have to have Office 365 Pro Plus starting in 2020. But that's not what it says, as you just noted.
That's not what it says.
They're also... Yeah. Right. The regular Office, it's not a subscription, that's still in mainstream support by 2020, also will be supported. So right now, we don't know what that version will be because that doesn't exist. The current version of Office, Office 2016 support ends in 2020. But I think we're going to hear about Office 2020 or whatever they're going to call the next version sometime fairly soon. And that will also be supported. So yeah, if you're an Office 365 administrator and you want to keep up with this, you can subscribe through RSS or you can just go and frequently check this blog. But I was really happy to find it and I added it to my own RSS reader. Very handy.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yep.
And finally, a tweet of the week. It's a new one.
It is. So instead of doing code name of the week, I thought this was a very topical tweet stream that happened over this weekend. There's a SharePoint community blogger. I don't know how to pronounce her name. I think it's Tashas Ev, T-A-S-H-A-S-E-V. She started a thread over the weekend about want to find some cool women who work at Microsoft to follow on Twitter. And she just started making a list and people started chiming in and making more additions to the list. The reason this is really awesome is it's hard to find a lot of women who work at Microsoft on Twitter. I've had trouble finding them. I mean, there's certain ones like Donna Sarkar that we all know. But there are a lot of other ones who are doing really cool things that she found that I didn't know. And she just has been compiling the list all weekend. So if you're someone who wants to add some more women bloggers and tweeters to your list, you should go check out this thread from her. It'll be pretty easy to find if you go to her Twitter. Yeah, it's Tasha Sev. Awesome.
Yeah, she posted the initial post on August 6th at 8:02 a.m. So you can go back chronologically.
Yeah.
And follow.
And it's really I found a bunch of cool people to follow that I didn't know through that thread. So if you're interested in doing that, go check it out.
the phrase "code curious" is awesome.
Isn't this great? This is in her profile. You know, this is awesome. Why. Diversity is so important in a workplace of any kind, but especially a tech workplace, is you wouldn't see this in a guy's tweets. But that's the point, is the variety of experience. She's wearing a bowl on her head, apparently. It says co-curious SharePoint tech community zealot, gourmandise, puns, nerds, and games, striving to be one of the wholehearted MS employee opinions mine. Heart. And I just, you know... I think part of the problem, you know, with this whole the Google thing, everybody's been talking about this, is that men have a vision of what it looks like in a tech workplace, what techs look like, what programmers look like, what a computer looks like, and it's totally masculine. It's totally male, and it's not that we don't want women around, but it just it doesn't fit the picture. And so it's so important that you see people like this and tweets like this and follow these people to understand that it isn't that thing that we've grown up with that we expect, but it's so much better and so much more diverse and colorful and fun. And that's how it should be, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well said, Leo.
I've been going back and forth on this whole Google thing for a week. We'll talk about it, I'm sure, more on Twig.
Yeah.
But that to me is the bottom line. Is why would you paint in one color when you can have 256 or even 16,356?
Listen, SVGA is big enough for anybody. 256 colors.
I'm one of them. We're still, you know, coding in white text on black screens. We don't. And at first it's like, what's this colorful stuff? But if you open up to it, it really brings a diversity and an excitement, and it's such a better experience for everybody. And there's no reason to say, "Oh, women are different. We shouldn't have them. No girls allowed." is just dopey. It's just dopey.
Yeah.
Anyway,
plus,
I'm sorry.
Plus, some of these, the thing that I thought was really cool is like a lot of these accounts, I started going to their tweets and I'm like, oh, I need to follow this one
because
they're doing all this stuff that I didn't know about at Microsoft.
Right.
Like, forget about the gender for a second, but like, you're just like, whoa, this person's cool and I never heard of them and I need to follow them, right?
Well, I'm guessing some of the most interesting stuff is being done by women at Microsoft, right?
They're, you know, at the keynotes lately at all their conferences, they've made a real point of making sure that there are a lot of women on stage doing very technical demos, and people have noticed it. It's been really something that you can't not see, and I think it's a great thing to see, especially for me, you know, being a woman.
And yes, women are different. We're not saying women should be like men.
Jeez.
I mean, we
are. Are they, Leo?
Well, some aren't. But you know, there's all kinds. There's a huge spectrum. It's a mosaic. However, celebrate the difference. It's fine. And the perspective that other people of other colors, races, national origins, genders bring to the table merely makes it a more vital and interesting palette. It doesn't diminish it in any way. And every man should, I think, kind of get, you know,
I find it odd that we even have to have that conversation.
We shouldn't have to have it. I know.
Yeah.
But we really, I know I'm an old man, right? I'm older than you guys. And I grew up in a world where there were definite gender roles.
Sure. No, I think we all agree you're part of the problem, Leo. Is that what you mean?
I'm definitely part of the problem.
I'm paraphrasing.
Still exist at home, you know. I saw a Bryan Cranston movie, very odd movie, where he just decides to live in the garage and not tell his family. He just disappears. It's called Wakefield. It's a very interesting movie, but in it he says, "My wife's jobs were inside the house, and my jobs were outside the house. The cars, the garbage. I did the stuff outside the house." She did the stuff inside the house. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very common. You know, there are we take these roles on. And then, of course, he disappears. So she has to do the outside. And he's laughing as she takes the garbage to the garbage to the curb. And there's no inside the house and outside the house.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just got on my high horse there. But I think everybody, this is a good idea, Mary Jo, follow this account.
Yeah.
And then find those tweets from August 6th and add some.
It just, that thread just spun out of control. It was like everybody was throwing more people in. It was great.
Yeah. And
I was happy to see I knew some of them.
Yeah, I know some of them, but there were a lot I didn't know too.
That's nice. That's really great. All right. Now that we're all happy, let's get some beer.
Exactly.
Yes.
Let's keep the happiness going.
Yes.
Beer pick of the week is from Dogfish Head out here on the East Coast. They have a beer called Sea Quench that is a gose. And I've picked a few goses before as beer picks. So a gose is a beer that's like a Berliner Weiss, kind of a little bit sour. But then at the end, they add a little salt, which sounds really weird when you're thinking about quenching your thirst. But it actually is great for quenching your thirst. So this one, Sea Quench from Dogfish Head, has
the worst
wines.
Name of any beer I've ever heard.
Sea Quench.
Sea Quench from Dogfish Head. However,
delicious.
I'm sure it's delicious.
Yeah. Black limes. I don't know what those are, but it uses black limes.
Yeah, I've never heard
coriander.
Of
that. And it just has a nice little salty, sour mix that's just very refreshing on a hot day.
They're calling it a session sour because it's 4.9%.
It's very light. Their explanation of how they made this and how they combined a bunch of beer styles, I'm like, wow. To me, it just tastes like a gose, which is not a bad thing because that's a delicious kind of beer.
And so that's the pick. I'm glad to learn more about beer from you every week. It's really great. I swear, I was never a beer drinker until this show. And now I try... I try.
You're thanking her for this.
Yeah, I am thanking you. Well, I don't drink a lot of beer still, but we had a triple the other night that you had recommended. It was so good.
Good, nice.
Yeah. And I never knew there was triples and sours, and I didn't know. I knew about IPAs, I knew about the basic pilsners, but I didn't know about all these other things. And so,
you know, it's like it's a little bit like wine without the kind of pukey element to it. You know,
I don't know what you mean.
Pretentious.
Oh yeah. It's not pretentious. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah.
All right. Good pick.
Before we move on, I just wanted to say a moment of silence, please, because I just got my media registration request for CES 2018.
Oy.
Are you going? Talk about ruining the summer.
You're going?
I don't know. I'm kind of on a schedule where I go to a CES and then for 6 years I don't go. And I'm kind of thinking.
It's like having a baby. It takes 6 years to forget how much pain it was. And then I remember. You get all excited. I'm going to CES. I'm going to see stuff. It's going to be shiny, happy people.
I'd rather have an email from my uncle asking for money.
And Paul wants to add, by the way, to the beer pick of the week, the jamon of the week.
Yeah, the jamon of the week. So actually, I just wanted to say, you know, we're in Barcelona this week, obviously, and there's some known good food from here, right? Like the ham, which is amazing. I think we talked about that last week. There are things like Padron peppers. There are things like, there are different drinks and different, you know, cavas and so forth. There's all kinds of excellent stuff. But I discovered something this past week that I'd never had before. In fact, that's what we're going to cook tonight. As soon as I'm done here, we're actually going to cook it at home. And it's called,
Botifarra Vermella.
I ordered this on the recommendation of a waitress in a restaurant, and she said it was going to be one of the most incredible things I ever ate. And
it
came out.
Is it a dried sausage or is it a?
That's the thing. No. So it's a cooked sausage.
Okay.
Not like the. It's not.
It's raw.
Yeah, you cook it. I mean, I mean, obviously, there are versions that are dried as well. But when it came out, what it looked like was just a sausage. Like, you know, you ever get a sausage where you kind of cut into it, it's kind of crumbly by a little bit, and. Yeah. And it's kind of tasteless and not interesting. And I thought, oh, God, like, this is terrible.
How boring, yeah.
And then I ate it. And it's one of the most incredible things I've ever had.
Of course
it is. Since doing this, I've actually gone back and had it three times now at the same restaurant. We bought it at home. There's a white version.
Yeah.
Which I had for breakfast this morning. Thanks, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And we've got friends over tonight. We're going to cook it tonight as well. I don't know if you can get this somewhere else. It's kind of like a Catalan specialty.
Botifarra Catalana. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, which has truffles or may have truffles in it, and is more like a cooked ham. There's quite a few Botifarra.
Yeah, there's different versions. Yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
It's known as Yonganissa.
Yeah, it's the blood version. Actually, I did have some of that too.
Yeah, Yonganissa. Black Botifarra is boiled pork blood in the mixture. Botifarra.
It's amazing.
Catalana.
It's got a nice spicy thing going on. Salty, spicy, whatever.
Egg. They have white. Which is a
it'll go well with the goes, perhaps.
You know what? I think
it'll probably go well. Yes,
do they must drink beer as well as wine. I mean, I know the Spanish are known for their wine, but
yeah. So actually, you know, okay. So one of the interesting things that's sweeping Europe these days is the craft beer sensation.
Yeah.
That's already occurred in the United States, and so there are places in Europe that were never big on beer or were big on crappy beer. For example, like in places like Spain, where it's really hot, the beer here is just like
it's water. Yeah,
it's light. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Because it's hot. Right. But actually, there are incredible craft beers here now. We've had some of them. There are even incredible craft beers in France, which is kind of an oxymoron of sorts. But there really are. And
actually, I've had excellent French beer. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this has happened. Yeah. This is an amazing thing. Yeah. And so it's a really, really nice change.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Paul, are you going to be there another week or so?
No. So next week, this is a little goofy, but I will actually be in Pennsylvania when we do the show next week, but only temporarily. So I believe I will be able to do it from my new house, but it will be in a rack of boxes. It will be stupid looking.
That's going to be fun. No. You should do like the people do at Costco. You should make a little house inside the box.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a moving box for it. That will be my desk. So I think I will do that. I think that will happen. And then between that day and the following Wednesday, I'll go back to Boston. We'll sell our house, and we'll move for real. And so I'll actually be in Pennsylvania, but it will be kind of a weird thing where I'm there temporarily next week, and then I'll be there for real the week after that.
This has been the longest move in history. It's been going on for
years.
I know. Look, you thought like Shogun was long or, you know. This is, yeah.
Paul and the Thornbirds next on Twit. Well, Paul, have a fun time in your waning days in Barcelona. Everybody should follow Paul on Instagram and Facebook. Do you allow followers on your Facebook page?
Yep. Not on Facebook, but on Instagram.
Not on Facebook, but Instagram. Okay. You can't not. Well, I guess you could have a closed account on Instagram. Because great pictures. Really fun
Instagram's
pictures.
Public.
Yeah. And then, of course, Paul continues to write during vacations. This is one of the good things about being a writer at Thurrott.com, T-H-U-R-R-O-T-T. Yeah, you can work. You can work all the time. You never get to stop.
Sure.
Paul is also has a number of books, including the new book on
the Microsoft account.
Microsoft aliases. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. The field guide to Microsoft aliases. That'll be at leanpub.com. All the other fields.
That's true. Guides.
Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's a ZDNet. That's her ZDNet home, where she writes constantly without an intermission every day. She is, my friends, and I'm proud to say it, the number 12th most influential tech journalist on Twitter. Paul, I found myself.
List.
I downloaded the top 100, and I'm glad to say I'm number 63. You'll be glad to know Brad Sams appears nowhere on the list. What? And neither does Paul Thurrott. It's ridiculous because what I realize what it is how much you tweet and the content of your tweets. Because people aren't going to follow you if you tweet you tweet.
I do a lot, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you don't tweet tech stuff, and that's what I said.
No.
From now on, I am going to be on that damn list next year, and I'm going to tweet nothing but tech headlines. Day in, day out.
Right. I do tweet tech headlines, but I do it to make fun of them.
Yeah. I've been doing that with snarky comments, but maybe that's not
the solution. That might explain my absence from the list.
I'm trying to think what Kara Swisher puts on Twitter. I don't think it's... See, I don't know
I don't
how
think
this
she
works.
Knows that Twitter exists. I am confused how she's on this list.
Yeah.
No, she tweets a lot.
Does she?
Does she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a list of journalists. How many other journalists follow you,
tech,
right? Isn't that all it is?
Followed by tech journalists, yes.
Yeah, so who cares? I don't care if journalists follow me. I want my readers to follow
That's
me.
That's a good point. And in fact, what happens, like Mike Isaac, who's very high on the list, has not really relatively that many followers. Kara has...
millions, right?
Well, 1.2 million, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's ranked right up there with her. So it isn't based on number of followers.
No.
Sure.
It's some calculation.
Yep.
But Paul, you're not on the list.
Leo, let me tell you something.
No, please. It's a family.
I am on different lists. They're not good lists.
Better lists.
No, they're not good.
All right, folks. Thank you for being here. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and 1800 UTC. If you want to join us live, twit.tv/live, please make sure you make a point to join the chat room at irc.twit.tv, because then you can play the drinking game. You also can watch after the fact on-demand audio and video of all of our shows is available from our website, twit.tv/ww for this show. But it's also on YouTube. You can, and best thing to do is however you listen to or watch podcasts, use that and subscribe so you get every single episode of Windows Weekly. You wouldn't want to miss one. We'll be back next Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Hope you will too. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.